Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Northcote Theatre in Exeter. Please welcome a man who's very much cream on first, and I'm not talking about scones. It's Richard Herring! Learn every lesson about walking on. My glasses have stayed. I've got so much more professional, have you noticed, since... If you were here last week, they... Very good audience last week. You got a lot to beat for last week. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lazily Swimming in Topsham Pool podcast. Though I was hanging around at Tucker's Hall the other day. Yeah, and that reaction shows me why it's number 23 of 99 things to do in Exeter. According to TripAdvisor, apparently it's owned by Tucker Jenkins. That's why it's called Tucker Jenkins owns it. Not Todd Carty, the character of Tucker Jenkins. When he's in character of Tucker Jenkins, he owns Tucker's Hall. Have you ever been to Tucker's Hall? There's 22 other things that are better, but you live here. You must have seen those. Anyway, he calls it Rahalastapa. Yes, just a reminder that I will be in the foyer after the show. If you want to grab a program, they are free, so don't feel you have to give money. But if, you know, money goes to scope. If you want to give a donation, that'd be lovely. I'm very happy to do selfies. I'm very happy to sell you some of my projects. We've got some exciting stuff. We've got Rahalastapa Top Trumps, a working game of Top Trumps. I've just found a one pack of Rahalastapa stickers. There's DVDs. Imagine, remember those? Of Fist of Fun you can get. You can get a couple of my stand-up shows. As well as the Emergency Questions books, lots of varieties of those. The Problem with Men, that's a great book I've written during lockdown about my International Men's Day thing, you may remember. If you want to find out what I was like when I was 40, how not to grow up. And if you're interested in my testicles, there's only one left. Then there's a book about that as well. But anyway, look, let's talk about Exeter. The city of Exeter is home to the Exeter Book. Do you know about that? There's the Exeter Book. There's only one book in Exeter. That's why they can call it that. It's one of the Wicked Willy ones from the 1980s. It's held in great reverence in the university. Not even the first one. It's just that's the only book that's ever been in.
been in Exeter until now. Exeter was the last place a woman was executed for witchcraft, of which you should be very proud. But, you know, there's still time to do some more. So do look out for that. There's underground passages all under Exeter. Do you know that? And that's where the Morlocks are living at the moment. And they're going to come up and eat you all when the bell rings. I saw a Morlock on Minor Stone Clearing. Definitely saw it. I saw a baby on a horse and a Morlock walking through the field together. Should try stone clearing. It's a great pastime. Look, we're going to crack straight on because we've got an absolutely fantastic, absolutely legendary guest. I'm so excited. I've literally just met him. He's been wandering around backstage. Got lost. It's very exciting. He's probably best known as Bart Columbus in Carry On Columbus, of course. He didn't seem keen to talk about for some reason. Will you please welcome the amazing, legendary Peter Richardson, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. Peter Richardson. Unbelievable. Have a seat, sir. And thank you so much for coming to see us.
I never heard of this film.
You never heard of Carry On Columbus?
This is Carry On Colitis. I never heard of it. I was never in it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, that's probably the best. Nigel Planer, I also introduced him, your former double act partner.
We're still friends.
You're still friends, that's good. Not every double actor still friends. And, he did talk about it, but he was a little embarrassed by it. It was a bold venture, I think, that maybe in hindsight...
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay, good. We'll move on.
I don't know this film. You must tell me about it.
I must. I'll tell you about it. I'll tell you what, after the show, we'll watch it together. That'll be... If you do well, we can go home. I don't think I've actually...
There's a guy called Peter Richardson, nothing to do with me.
Okay. That's
right, yeah, he uses my name quite a lot.
Oh, okay.
For things that don't work.
That explains a lot. Hey, look, Peter, I was saying backstage when we met, the comic strip means so much to me and my generation. The comic strip and the young ones were... I'd been a little bit into Monty Python, but it wasn't our generation. I'd been a little bit into Not 9 o'clock News, which I know you wrote for, but it was, again, it felt like an older generation. And Channel 4 started on the same day. The comic strip was the first. Five Go Mad in Dorset was the first comedy show on Channel 4. And I remember, like, watching everything on Channel 4 that day, and I remember getting to this and just being absolutely blown away by this channel that was for us and this comedy that was for us, and actually just slightly predated the young ones, right? It was out before the young ones.
Well, this is all happening at the same time.
Yeah. But it was like a week before the young ones came out. So it was a very, very fecund time for a teenage comedy fan to suddenly see stuff. Yes. And the comic strip obviously started as a live thing, which we'll talk about, but you're saying 50... How many were made?
It's almost that, yeah. Including movies and...
Sure. I mean, it's an incredible achievement, not just from, the standard is fantastic. You were saying some of them aren't as good as others, but I think that's just a personal taste. But, to even convince two or three TV channels in the end to do a different thing every week that obviously costs a fair amount of money and not just...
Doesn't happen very often. No, it doesn't happen. I mean, it hadn't happened before us, really.
No.
Probably won't happen again. So, I mean, it wasn't good television, really, because television is about repeat and about people getting to know characters. We did that. We changed them every week.
Yeah.
We were like a repertory company, really.
It was, but, what an amazing group of comedians and actors you had in it. There were some people who were in a lot of them. There were some people who just popped up in occasional ones, but obviously the first one was you and Aid and French and Saunders and Robbie Coltrane. Yes. It's a pretty strong start. And also a woman wearing a kind of string vest, and nothing underneath, which I kept rewinding for some reason.
That was everything.
It
was the second one.
It was the second one. Okay, I thought
it wasn't as good. But.
Five Go Mad on Mescaline. I know. Did you appreciate at the time, like when it started, how important it was to people and how amazing it was to have this opportunity?
We've been in a club in Soho, which we started in 1980. And I think the gang, we formed a gang there that sort of became this force of what they called alternative comedy. In fact, Time Out called us the Gorillas of New Wave Humour. and yeah, we sort of went in this sort of sleazy theatre in Paul Raymond's review bar.
Yeah.
You had to go through all these passages of like naked women and stuff to get to us. Which is kind of what we wanted, really.
Yeah, well, Eddie Izzard did a club there, I think, in the same place.
We didn't
want
an art centre with, you know, coffee and cheese flans or a pub. We wanted to go to a nightclub that Lenny Bruce would have played.
Yes. I mean, I played it when very early in the 90s when I was trying to do stand-up. And it was, you know, and I was quite a naive young man. And it was sort of, you shared a room with naked ladies. So again,
we didn't know.
That's what you've given me all my life, it seems, is naked ladies. So the comic strip. So how did it go from being that club? It happened quite quickly, right, to getting the TV
exactly.
Show.
I mean, we did a year there, and we had so many, it became quite a cult thing. In fact, we had people like Jack Nicholson, Dustin Hoffman, and all these people turning up, and David Bowie would arrive with Robin Williams.
Robin Williams.
We'd arrive at the end of the night saying, can I go on? I've got David Bowie with me. Can I go on? We say, we're just closing. You know, Paul Raymond's staff are going to charge you.
Right.
He said, I'll pay them, don't worry. Wow. We'll keep it open for an hour, which the audience loved, you know.
Of course, yeah, amazing.
But and then we'd go out. And he was an incredible force, Robin. You know.
Yeah.
But Nigel and I, did he tell you, we used to do a sketch called AC/DC 10, which is a sort of...
Oh, he didn't tell me.
Soft porn airline disaster kind of sketch.
Right.
And starts out as a Manuel in a plane.
Right.
But then I'm a hijacker or something, I can't remember. But the thing is, the hijacker is very demanding. He wants to know what the movie's going to be and the plane he's going to seize.
Right.
So Nigel goes, it's Kramer versus Kramer. And I said, Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep. And I said, don't give me that feel-good shit. I want, you know, what else you got? Anyway, one night I'm looking at the front row, that looks like Dustin Hoffman. And I thought, oh, my God. This is not supposed to happen. He's supposed to be in Hollywood.
Yeah.
We're in this little cinema and, you know, theatre in Soho.
Yeah,
so
wow.
I just sort of froze. And I thought, shall I just say, is there any other movies, you know? but no, we did. And then he came back and again and brought a whole lot of people saying he was going to go on, but then didn't.
You know, right.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, what an incredible time it must have been. And obviously you and Nigel, had, you know, you did quite a theatrical show together where you played all the parts. And
double act, yes.
Because you started out as an actor, right? I've got, on IMDb, it says you were in an episode of the New Avengers, uncredited. Is that
That's
true?
That's right, with Jenna Lumley, yes, right.
Yeah.
I did things like Elizabeth R. with Glenda Jackson. And
right.
I was just looking at it the other day. What an amazing actress she was, you know, seeing that.
Yeah.
And I was looking for myself, actually, in that.
So you sort of...
But I got so involved with what she was doing, I actually forgot to look for myself. Because I'm sort of like somewhere in the distance.
And are you in Ripping Yarns as well? Are you somewhere in Ripping Yarns?
No.
Oh, there's a rumour that you're in Ripping
Yarns.
No, that's
it wasn't.
Not true.
No, okay. No.
Well, that's sorted that one out, Wikipedia. I'll never trust Wikipedia again. Did you meet Nigel when you were kids? Is that right?
We met in about 1975.
Right.
And we worked together down here on Dartmoor, summer camp thing, doing drama.
Yeah,
with a lot of kids, and we started improvising together and doing stuff. And you know, we had a very similar sense of humour,
yes,
which has sort of kept us talking to each other for a long time.
Yeah. That's interesting because Andy Nyman and Jeremy Dyson, who write together and written a fantastic novel called The Warlock Effect, and they're involved in League of Gentlemen and Ghost Story. They met at a Jewish summer camp as well, and they just really got on. So it's a little bit Galton and Simpson, isn't it, to meet as without the illness, to meet as kids and then form a double act.
Nigel and we wrote a show together along with Pete Richards,
yes,
which we did at the Roundhouse downstairs. That was our first ever production. We played it here actually in Northcott,
right,
and in Plymouth, and there was a character that I originated called Neil in that, which I'd seen at a festival, and I sort of saw this folk singer at a festival, which Neil was based on, and then with Nigel I worked on it together, and it sort of expanded into character that he eventually did in Young Ones, you know. And
well, let's talk quickly about the Young Ones, which I, you know, as a comedy fan. And I'm sure a lot of people feel this. I talked to Nigel about it, and he felt it was, you know, he had views on it. But obviously, like, you were a double act with Nigel, and you'd put down together this show that you'd created two characters for. You created,
we played loads of characters.
Yeah,
we
were. And so, but you should have been in the young ones. You should have been Mike in the young ones, right?
Not at all. Really. No. In fact, I think you're wrong. I think I was.
Oh, you think you were? Okay.
I was a big part of it.
I've booked the wrong guy.
Or maybe I dreamt that.
Maybe you were. But it would have been interesting in an alternate universe. I mean, Mike was the character.
I would have been rubbish.
You said that on a... And I'm not sure you would have been rubbish.
I tell you why, because it's a television sitcom. I got the Channel 4 deal. I was making films, and I was much more interested in doing films. And I think, to be honest, the style of it wasn't me at all, the character. I'm too serious for the young ones, you know.
I think that would have worked, but I think Christopher Ryan was okay in the end, but I think he sometimes didn't get. He was playing it as an actor, rather than as a comedian.
Nigel had his character well established. Yeah. I mean, the punk thing was a kind of. They're all big stereotype characters.
Of course, yeah.
I don't know where mine was going to come from, but.
No.
And funny enough, when we did Bad News, I was much more comfortable in that playing Spider, the drummer, because. Again, I didn't know what I was going to be until I put this wig on and the sideboards. I went, oh, God, I'm Pete Trill. This guy used to play harmonica in a band I was in.
Right.
Yeah, he's like, you know, Pete. He's like really sort of happy-go-lucky guy, you know, like that, you know. And I thought, that's what Spider is. And suddenly Spider was there. And I sort of luckily found it in just a nick. I don't think I would have found the young one's character, though, I don't think.
I think you were. I mean, you are, you know...
It's the way of shooting. I don't get that sort of whole three-camera thing, but...
Maybe, but I think, you know, you're a very good actor. Like, you know, it's
I've had moments, yes. No,
I think, you know... I think it's sort of... within the... You were like a little bit... As a fan of the comic strip, you were like a little bit of a mystery because you would do all these different things. So, like, the five-go-mad guy was very different than Spider, was very different than the four men in the car. You know, you would inhabit all these different characters. And the sort of fistful of traveller's check guy that you would, you know, Lee Van Cleef? Whoever you were.
The Italian actor. In
there, that's all right.
What's his name?
Gabriel. Oh, the other guy.
Yes, yeah, a few dollars more, yes.
Yeah, I just don't
know
much about
it. The drug addicted Indio.
Yeah.
Lee Van Cleef was the hardest one to do. I did that in GLC.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I had to gargle whiskey every time I did a line.
Sorry, just kicking my DVDs over. Sorry. I'm being very clumsy today. I'm very clumsy today. You had a beef with Paul Jackson, though, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I think he came in and tried to split up a lot of the double acts on the comic strip, and he did that a couple of times, and I just said, you don't need to do that. He did it with his first talent show he did called Boom Boom and kept Adrian and me out of the double act sort of thing, which I thought was unnecessary and, you know, I don't think they would have done it. I don't think anybody else would have done that, but he did. I think it was just keeping control of his... And, I mean, it was quite a setback for us in the way that happened. And it was...
Yeah.
And then when we started the comic strip, it became a big gang of people and it was going great. And then I auditioned French and Saunders, who joined us. As guests, and then they became part of the group. And he came along and said, well, I want to do this show, and but I don't want those two.
Right.
And I said, no, you're not going to do that. I said, we're a group now, you know, and they still went ahead. I think the others, they wanted to keep him with them, so.
Yeah.
But I just thought, why should he need to split us all up?
Well, I mean, you were certainly right about French and Saunders being worth keeping in, I think, so.
Yeah, I think it was unnecessary what he did.
You
know. But anyway, whatever happened, it sort of made the relationship a non-starter in terms of me working on the young ones, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it feels to me, and just, you know, you're quite a formidable force. You know what you want. I mean, I think that's why you ended up directing a lot of these shows and getting into directing.
Extremely bossy.
But, you know, I think, like, as a fan watching it, I felt you were quite, you know, you were a presence and you were an intimidating presence, I think, and a bit more of a mystery, I think, than the other guys. Maybe because... You know, well, they weren't in the young
they'd
ones.
They've done the light entertainment side of it.
Yeah.
I was saying I'm too serious, really, for that.
Well, the seriousness is good, though. You're funny. You're funny, and there was an intensity there, and, you know, and, yeah. And it's sort of weird, and not weird, but it's weird how quite a few of your things kind of have parallels in America. I think the Bad News and Spinal Tap sort of evolving at the same time.
Actually, yeah. We shot it about the same time. Never knew what they were doing. They didn't know our show either. I mean, ours came up earlier because we'd made, but I think they were made about the same time.
Yeah.
Those things happen, you know.
They do, of course. And, you know, and they're very different takes on the...
Yes, I mean, theirs was a successful band sort of coming down and we were a really grubby band trying to go up.
Yeah.
So it was a different kind of story.
Yeah. Did it? I mean, it was Bad News was probably more successful in the short term than Spinal Tap was, anyways. You probably felt like because Spinal Tap didn't really fly until it went out on, but no, it came out on video and then everyone got into it. But it didn't do very well to begin with. Whereas Bad News, I think you were making singles and you took.
That happened after.
Was it?
We did the Castle of Donington, the Monsters of Rock, with Ozzy Osbourne, Lemmy from Motorhead, Def Leppard. Saxon, every heavy metal band.
Yeah.
And we were on about third, I think. We arrived at 8 in the morning. There were mud fights going on. There was about 60,000 people out there.
Yeah.
And there were some banners for us out there, Bad News and our characters and that, from people. We were holding up banners.
Yeah.
And we started having mud fights at 8 in the morning. What's going to happen by 3 in the afternoon? And, of course, it was bottles of piss coming at us. Right? It was... Tommy Vance came on. It was a sort of curtain where all the roadies worked behind, metal mesh curtain.
Yeah.
That stopped all these bottles coming at them when they were trying to do wiring up the stage. And Tommy Vance came on with a crash helmet, body armor, raised the curtain, did his bit. Bottles, plastic bottles of piss flying all around them. They saved it for us.
But they liked you, though, as well. I mean, maybe not all of them for throwing piss, but I think they
liked to abuse us. They loved to abuse us. I mean, we had a lot of stories on Bad News. I'm not going to tell you all about
that. You can tell me. I won't tell anyone.
That's very funny stuff.
You played all the instruments as well, though, right?
We did. We're playing live, exactly. That was the first gig there, in front of about 60,000, 70,000. It was our very first gig.
Right.
It was like, it's snuff comedy, really. Yeah.
There was a lot of confidence in that group of people. I mean, it was it's an amazing group of people. Obviously, Rick Mayall, must have been a
amazing.
Phenomenon.
He never played a note on the bass. Right. He's just too busy prancing around.
Yeah.
But, showing off, being funny.
Yeah.
I said, it's far too serious. We're trying to play a band. But, we had some extraordinary... We did this tour, actually, which is after EMI gave us an advance, which most of it went spent on catering at Trevor Horn Studio to do the album with Brian May. And we went on this... And that was just, I think, put us off ever being in a rock band, you know. It was exhausting. But I'll just tell you one quick thing. One night we came back through Dorset from Portsmouth, where we'd had sheep's eyes thrown at us. And, it was quite weird. I don't know if there was sort of veterinary surgeons on the night out.
I think people, you were so bad, people were going out, getting a sheep's eyes out of their sockets.
That's right.
To throw them.
God knows where these eyes came from. It's just a stage was lit up with these eyes.
Wow.
That was the start of the evening.
Yeah.
I twisted my ankle, so I was only playing the drums with one foot.
Right.
And we drove down through Dorset, past the Dorset Knob Biscuit Factory, which is on the top of a hill. And you come down towards Chalmers, and there's this bend, and we found this scooter lying in the road. And so we pulled over and stopped and called out and said, "Anybody there?" And we climbed up the hedge, and this guy had not only just gone over the hedge, but he'd gone down into a quarry.
Oh.
Not a field. He just gone straight down this quarry, and there's a bloke with him down there. And they go, "Help!"
God.
And so we scrambled. Rick and Nigel and I scrambled down this side of this quarry to sort of help, whatever. And as we got, this guy had broken so many bones, and he was in a terrible state. I mean, so Rick and Nigel immediately, God knows why, started being Rick and Neil from the Young Ones.
Right.
So it's all right, man. Don't worry. It's Neil, Rick here. And Nigel's going, "It's all right. I'll help you, man. You know, you've got to stay awake, man." And I've just seen this guy's lying there thinking, I've died. And the Young Ones are there to greet me as I go through the gates of St. Peter. And so we... Wow, so anyway, we waited till this guy had obviously called, got an ambulance, and the ambulance arrived, and we drove him back to Devon, where we were staying to play Exeter the next day.
Yeah.
And we went on about 2 weeks later, we came to Bristol Colston Hall, which we're not allowed to mention, are we?
I think you can mention
anyway, this young woman came out and said, "Would you sign this poster? It's my brother who's in hospital, and he was the one you rescued from this quarry in Dorset.
Amazing.
Rick and we all signed it, rude things.
Yeah.
Rick signed, "You stupid cunt." So I'm sure he treasures that poster, you know.
I'm sure he does, that's incredible. What a wonderful story. Amazing. You know, it almost makes me wish I'd crashed a motorcycle so I could have met the young ones. That would have been pretty cool. Were you aware that it was a phenomenal group of people? Were you just caught up in it at the time?
Absolutely. When Nigel and I first went down to the Comedy Store, I mean, you know, I think we'd both been amongst actors. We'd trained at drama school. I was at Bristol Old Vic, he was at Lambda. Mm-hmm. I really didn't like the whole acting scene much. The fine actors quite boring, really.
Yeah, they can be.
A lot of them.
It's a sort of boring job. You've got to be a bit boring to want to do it.
I wanted to be an actor, but I just didn't.
Yeah.
But I hung out at the art school more than anything else.
Yeah.
However, what was I going to say? We're getting to... about the gang. Yes, so when we came down to the Comedy Store, we suddenly met people who were like us. We'd actually been very influenced by a double act called Sal's Meat Market.
Yes.
Who were an American double act. One of them actually it was John Ratzenberg, who was in Cheers.
Yeah.
Played the postman in Cheers. But then he was touring Devon. He was in Devon. And we saw him down here playing. And it was fantastic, the double act. And that was very influential on us, you know, in terms of our first show.
Yeah, because, it was combining theatre and comedy, really, wasn't it? Which I suppose, you know, that is what you've done throughout your whole career you've always had that eye for that's made you this great director for the way of making it theatrical, but also understanding comedy as well, is a rare combination.
I think seeing Lexi and Rick particularly there, Rick was amazing. You know, I mean, he did the poems. You saw that. You've probably seen the video of that.
Yeah, yeah,
just stunning. And Lexi was amazing too. And so we suddenly thought, God, we're with Pete. Some really crazy, and immediately as being a sort of director, producer type role, I thought I could put this all together and we could do this every night. Because the Comedy Store was only once a week.
Right.
And Don Ward said, "No, I don't want to give up the strippers. I want to." Saturday night's fine, we'll just do that. And I said, right. That's when I went hunting around Soho. Every sex club I went into, they weren't interested.
Right.
They just wanted my money.
Yeah.
So I eventually found Paul Raymond's place, and that's how we sort of got in there. But Rick was amazing. And, of course, Adrian at that point wasn't really... They weren't really a double act at that stage.
No, that's right.
Adrian was his mate from Manchester. And he used to do this Beckett sketch of him, which wasn't that funny. But a week before we opened the comic strip, we did a warm-up gig in Hampstead in a pub called Pentameters.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a week before we opened. And I was saying to Rick, "Are you sure you want to do it? Go alone? You're fine." "They're fine. Adrian and I are going to be together on this. Great." And they arrived at the Pentameters in these purple suits with the most killer act that blew us all off the stage. It was absolutely brilliant, you know.
Yeah, I mean...
The Dangerous Brothers.
The Dangerous Brothers. And Rick was... I mean, you see that... the video of him just coming on stage and not saying anything and just going... And the audience are laughing. And he's
wonderful.
And it's just like... He makes it last for...
But if they laugh, they say, "Shut up."
Yeah, he gets angry with them. He can't understand why they're laughing at them. And it's literally for doing nothing. It's just the funniest. And it's that confidence is what I was talking about last week. If you were here, anyone. I was talking to Spencer Jones about that. It's that confidence to walk on.
Oh,
and it's so...
So brilliant.
What he was doing was so... brave as well, because it's, you know, he's playing a character who's a useless poet or a useless, you know, silly student, and he doesn't let on that it's a character.
Yes.
So some audiences will have not known.
You should see it somewhere. Yeah. You probably see it on YouTube.
Yeah, there's plenty of it. I'm sure these guys have seen it all. But yeah, it's...
We did something similar in Bad News when we wrote a song called Hey, Hey, Bad News.
Right.
We only once had to do this at some big gig and say... Listen, I want you to sing along, but it's Hey, Hey, Bad News, not Fuck Off, Bad News. We only had to do that once.
Yeah.
And every time it happened at a gig, Rick would get angry and go, "No, no, it's Hey, Hey, Bad News." Not Fuck Off, Bad. And get really angry. So it's the same gag, really. But
yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
It's so, I mean, I think like for, you know, my generation of comedians who are now like me in their late 50s, which is sort of, it must be weird for us both. It's very weird for me. You know, it was this thing that just sort of defined our generation. And I think all of the comic strip and the young ones just gave people the idea. I think maybe the young ones a little bit more because the comic strip was a bit more professional. So you would think, oh, that would be hard to do.
We were on a channel that was getting very small ratings. I mean, yeah. You know, we're getting 4 or 5 million. Young was getting 12 million, TV. So it was a massive sort of... We were kind of playing to a cult.
Yeah.
Anyway, in any case, we would have been... Because they was different each week, it took a time for people to start appreciating certain ones we'd done. You know what I mean?
So, I do, yeah.
So in hindsight, it was all right. But at the time, it's bad television because you're not bringing them along with you next week with the next one, you know.
No, but, you know, I think, like, as I say, I think it's just, it was just, I mean, it wasn't a time when comedy came, for younger people came along very often. It would be once every 4 or 5 years rather than every week, you know. Yeah. Like, now it feels like there's a new comedy show every week. And so it was, you know, it was great that it was good, but it also gave you it gave certainly me and people like Robin Ince again, you know, the idea that this could be possible. You know, I was growing up as a schoolboy in Somerset and there was no one in my family was in show business. So you'd see you guys doing all this stuff and you knew all the story of where you'd all come from, and it was just go, okay, this is like possible.
Yes. We went Oxford or Cambridge, we were different bunch.
But, so yeah, it was a very exciting time for us. And as well as the comic strip, which we might return to, well, let's talk about Supergrass, which was a comic strip thing, but it was a movie, like, so it was an actual movie for Supergrass.
It was our first, the first movie we did.
Yeah.
Shot down in Hope Cove, down here. So
right.
And on Dartmoor. So we went to Portugal, all of us, and wrote some ideas down and had a chat and got a thing, and then we decided Supergrass would be good, you know, a guy who was... making up a big story, basically, to get this girl.
Right.
And then gets into terrible trouble because the police actually have a case going on that's like that, you know.
Yeah.
But, I suppose what's interesting with that was we were huge fans of Steve Martin. That's what I remember of Supergrass, is that we used to love The Jerk. We all used to watch it together. I mean, I knew every line from especially the first 50 minutes of it, up to Jackie Mason and all that stuff. And amazingly, when we did the premiere at ABC's Shaftesbury Avenue, Steve Martin turned up.
Right.
And we couldn't believe it, actually. It was just, like, you know, fantastic that he came in. And I got a call next day from an American, and I thought it was my father-in-law, because he's got a very deep voice. He said, "Hi, Peter." I said, "Oh, Norman, how are you? Did you enjoy the show?" Yeah, we did, very much. and he said, "And Victoria liked it, too." That was his message. Sorry, who is this? He said, "Steve Martin." Oh, right. He said, "Would you like to come down to Pinewood and have a lunch and have a chat?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I'd love to." Didn't say I was busy that day. So I went down and he said, "There's a scene in Supergrass that I wanted to talk to you about, which is where you're all falling out laughing." He said, "I'm about to do this little Shop of Horrors where I've got to do this laughing thing. How did you do that? Because it looks so real." And I said, "Well, I'll give you one word, amyl nitrate." he was shocked. He was appalled. I mean, he was in control, Stephen. He didn't want to be in control. And I was directing it, so I just gave the camera a list of shots of what did. Took this stuff and did it.
Wow.
Mad.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's what I'm talking about. There's the
so
feeling.
So me and Adrian
of,
were really this, absolutely pissing ourselves.
Yeah,
scene.
Yeah.
I said, that's what we did. So you'll have to do that, Steve.
Every night. But that's the sort of anarchy that was, you know, that you felt was there. I think even as a kid, and I wouldn't have known about amyl nitrate if you told me that at that time. But, you know, you felt there was some, there was a naughtiness and a roughness. You, and you are this very ruggedly sexy man, and then you still are, Peter.
Who's
I will add that.
Who are you talking about now?
I'm talking about you. Thanks. Gorgeous man, in jumping around in your pants onto
oh,
cars.
Bullshitters.
But you're a very good looking man.
Oh, well.
And a very.
What are you doing after the show?
You can come. I'm staying at the Premier Inn. You can come back. I've got.
I can't wait. Can we go now?
You can go as soon as you want. Got to take it where you can get it on tour when you're.
Nice to meet you, Richard. Very nice. I mean,
but so yeah, so was it sort of as fun off screen as it was on?
Mostly, yes.
Yeah,
it was. I mean, Fistful of Travis Checks was a kind of memorable. I think everyone remembers those 3 weeks in Spain.
Yes,
right down in the desert with no phones, nothing there, no landline phone or anything. We were there.
Right.
They never had no idea in Channel 4 what was going on for about 3 weeks, and they'd send stuff home. You know, we never heard whether they liked it or not. But that had a lot of stories there with that, really.
Yeah.
Driving. Everyone drove out there in different cars and things, and chaos, absolute chaos. But it was. And I think Rick and I, we used to, because we couldn't see the rushes, we used to listen to the sound tapes and just go, yeah, it's sounding good.
Right.
It was a good radio show. Right. You know.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, it's. How much did Channel 4 have to say about if you sent them the stuff? Did they say this can't go in and this can go in, or were you, it feels like you were in pretty good control of the project?
They trusted us.
Yeah,
they did trust us, and I mean, occasionally there would panic about something. There was one guy we were going to do a film that got well, TV show really about Eddie Monsoon that got stopped because the guy we were going to film it studio in Wandsworth phoned up Channel 4 and said, if Channel 4 broadcasts this, I will give them the studio for free. He was so disgusted by our script.
Right.
And so the lawyers got on and said, right, we've got to stop this one. They did. You know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun, but it was a bit rude, I suppose.
It seems hard to believe that they stopped anything.
We voted with Dawn and Jennifer as well. So
Yeah.
And they suddenly wanted to bleep the F word, but then... Before and after that, they just let it go, whatever. But when we did the strike,
yeah,
we had to bleep all the F's, you know, sort of king this and king that, you know. So,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, with the ones, you know, that became like a little. You did had a few goes at the Hollywood film of a true event, so a strike where you were Al Pacino playing Arthur Scargill.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. And it's a great. I mean, that feels like that could have been. I mean, it was a sort of series because you did a few of them. But that felt like that could have been. If they were going to do a series, you know, you could have done those all at once. But you've still. I heard that you had tried to do one of Boris Johnson. Was that going to be the same?
Yes.
The same idea. That
I
didn't
know
come
Nigel
on?
And I were working on that.
Yeah.
He wasn't writing, but I was writing with another person, and very sad. Yeah, it was called Lie Another Day. it was Boris and Cameron and Osborne all trained in the Minsk Academy to be Etonians, and then dropped into Eton in their cricket gear. In fact, there's a container that's dropped on the Eton playing field, and there's a cricket ball that hits the side. They come out with their cricket gear on. They go, "What happened to you three? Come on over." So they're the Oxford three. So it's like it's the spy.
The Cambridge thing.
And of course, the main KGB character was Dominic Cummings. Of course, you know.
Yeah.
Nigel was going to play that.
Right.
So sadly, it's not made. That was a good script. You know?
Yeah, it sounds good. So did that just didn't.
They got into problems with. They had a company that wanted to have control of casting and crew, which even our first film, Fuck a Man Dorset, we've been able to use what we want, you know, through the cast we wanted. They said, no, we've got control of that.
Right.
So it was our anniversary film, and I said, no, we can't do that.
Right, that's a big shame, although, I can tell that, that some people would have bent, wouldn't they, and said, okay, fine, but that's not...
Well, it just wasn't going to be right to make it.
No.
And we didn't have Boris at that point either.
Right.
I was hoping Matt
Lucas.
Matt Lucas would have been great, you know. Yeah. He didn't want to do it.
Yeah, because he does do Boris Johnson.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
He would have been fantastic. And, yeah,
but it would have come out, because things, events happen so fast anyway, it would have come out once he'd gone.
Well, yes, after Liz Truss had been gone. So it's like, I said, we were probably saved, actually.
Yeah. I mean, Liz Truss was definitely too quick for you to be able to do. I mean, so it's retrospectively, you could almost do like Henry V, part one and part two of this whole shenanigans. You could do the whole. So yeah, it's great that you're still, you know, that you're still creating these things and still trying to get these things
going. Yeah,
I've got
one at the moment called "It Ends Badly," which I'm still hoping to get off the ground. Which is, you know, it's got about 40 minutes of mayhem in the 90 minutes that it is there. You know?
Right. Because you've got a production company and here, and why did you? Were you obviously brought up in? Were you brought up in Devon or Cornwall?
Yeah, Devon.
Devon. And so you've come back, and your production company's based here. Or was it important to live in? Yeah. Why did you want to live in? Why did you want to have it here?
Well, I was from here, and I was living in Camberwell for 20-30 years. I was in Bath in Camberwell for that time, which I loved. It was great, but. Children and four children. Just, I thought, get out of town. put them in Cabbage, you know, Totnes. Yeah. So, which I knew very well. And of course, I knew they'd love Totnes. It was full of teenagers, you know.
Yes.
At the time. They're all gone now. But
the teenagers are all gone?
Well, yeah, well, the art school moved, you know.
Oh, right. So cool.
Yeah, so it was a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, it's your son's a stand-up.
Red,
yeah.
No.
He's very good. He does little videos online.
That's why
you're
doing videos. We're getting almost as much as you.
Well, you know, the youngsters come through and they overtake me, and I just stay in my lane.
There's a Richard Herring shoe shop in Kingsbridge. It's not your business.
It isn't, but you know, we used to. I went to school in Cheddar in Somerset, and whenever we went to Stratford upon Avon to see a play on the evening. Which wasn't very often, but we'd sometimes get in a bus and the English department would take us there and we'd pass Richard Herring's shoes on the way to Stratford everyone in the bus would sing, Richard Herring's shoes, Richard Herring's shoes.
So it's a national brand.
Yeah, I'm just going to see. I started, but it's quite good because they do bags and stuff and they've all got Herring written on a little crest, so it looks like it's my personal crest.
Are they
crest.
Doing well off all the hits you're getting? Are they doing well out of that?
I don't know if they are. I don't know if they're doing very well. But do you buy Herring shoes made by Richard Herring? I think he might still be alive, Richard Herring.
Is he?
I think he is, but I might be wrong. But there's the whole family. They all make shoes, the little cobblers. It's a big Herring tradition. I don't think we're related to the... My family are from the north. I think we're Vikings originally.
Oh, right. Most of us are.
And I looked at a map and that's where the Herrings are sort of in...
Yeah, apart from Cheddar.
Middlesbrough. But we moved to Cheddar.
I want to film there one day. I figure that whole rise up through the rocks is such a great... You could shoot the Alps there, you know.
Man, I've tried to write so many... I've tried to get so many sitcoms about Cheddar Gorge off the ground. Yeah, yeah.
I love going through there.
Yeah, there's so much history there. I've got one about a guy called Roland Pavey who made his own cave in the 19th century. Right. And tried to... He believed he had wings and used to jump off Cheddar Gorge to try and prove he had, like, angel wings.
Is that right?
He water crashed diviner. And then I used to work in Cheddar Caves, so I wrote a sitcom about Cheddar Caves. It's so hard getting stuff on, Peter. And you managed to do 50 fucking films.
Well,
films.
Over 80 years, you know.
Yeah, but do you sit back and think, wow, this is an amazing body of work that I've created? Because it's not, we'll get on, there's other stuff as well.
I forget about them, really, but I do, there's a few favourites I like, you know. I liked our Blair film, Comfort Tony Blair.
Yes.
I think some...
With Stephen Mangan?
I think some of the satires probably work best, but I like Four Men and playing Four in a Car.
Yeah. And that was, again, that was the what should have been the young ones in the cast there with the other three young ones.
We did. There was the four of us again, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then Bad News. We've done quite a lot together.
You have done a lot together, so it's good. And I was hearing about, I think it was in the Tony Blair one, that health and safety... Again, you know, I think nowadays the idea of you actually taking amyl nitrate to get a shot would maybe be frowned on.
No,
but you did quite a lot of dangerous stuff.
We didn't tell anybody except Steve Martin.
Yeah, except Steve Martin.
And I told you now.
Yeah, now we know.
So you have
now
to die.
I'll die. We'll kill everyone in the room. We'll give them all amyl nitrate.
Turn the gas on, please. Sorry, that's very bad. It's not funny. They're laughing.
They're laughing as well. It's like, laughing gas.
It's,
like,
it's gallows humour here, isn't it?
It is gallows humour. The people in the West Country have a good sense of you. They understand that. There was an incident where you were filming outside Buckingham Palace on a motorcycle. Is that right?
Yes,
which I think, again, is I can't believe you got away. You'd be shot now, wouldn't you, if you did that?
Maybe. I don't know. But I was driving this motorbike around. Well, it was a trial bike, a land bike. It wasn't even a road bike.
Right.
Which, because we were doing the journey from nuclear power plant to Westminster, and then it was a race against time to get to Parliament to do a speech,
right,
and win the day. And so the idea was that I break down in the motorbike, breaks down in the Mall, and then I run the last bit, just make it. So we kind of came round the corner of with the van, the guy hanging out the back of the van with the camera.
Yeah.
John Metcalf, Cowboy John, who did Fistful and all these different ones. He was the only one who probably worked with us, actually.
Right.
Because he'd do all these incredible things. And we came around the corner. As we were coming around, I started pretending that I knew the sound we put on afterwards, but, spluttering.
Yeah.
And then just stopped and threw the bike down and ran after the van. Oh. And I got to him, and he said, yeah, that's okay. We need to go again, though. Said John. Suddenly, all these police cars around us.
What a surprise.
And they went, what are you doing? And they said, who's in charge here? And of course, I was the director, but I said, I'm just an actor in this. So they said, well, whose bike is this then? And we pointed to the guy who owned it. And we had to pay his £500 fine for no license, no hard hat, there was nothing legal at all, no insurance, nothing, no. Nothing legal.
did Channel 4 hear about this, or did they?
After, only because Jennifer told the story.
So it's it seems to me it was as much fun to do, or as crazy to do, as we sort of felt maybe it was.
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, because when I worked with Keith, that was mayhem, really. Always with Keith,
Well, I have some history with Keith.
I bet you do. doing the bullshit and all that, running around underpants.
Yes. No, it's very good.
Guns.
Yes.
Battersea.
Yes.
Very silly. Stephen Frears, I'm not directing that. No, he was directing the film. He said, I'm not doing that stuff in the street there. You do that.
Oh, really?
I don't do pubs or streets, So he wouldn't do pubs, that's the thing.
Wow. But so you just directed yourselves for that?
Did it.
What would it take for you to fillate the actor Keith Allen?
Fillate him?
Yeah. Man, give him oral sex, would you?
Oh, I see. It wasn't bad. I mean, it was.
It's one of the questions I occasionally ask people. We've had at least one guest who's.
As bad as you think.
Okay. I think it'd be pretty bad. Look, there's loads to. I mean, there's so much to talk to you about, and we won't have time. But I will try and get some other stuff in. We may come back to the comic strip. But what I'd forgotten, or maybe I didn't know, was that you were one of the main people behind Stella Street, which was another phenomenally successful series.
Well, it was John, Phil, and me. Really, we worked it together, and they played all the parts, and I did the camera and directing and lighting.
Yeah.
With Jack, my son, helping.
Right.
That was it, really. We had two makeup artists who worked all the time on them.
Of course.
And two costume people, and that was it, really. We had someone else helping, carrying the light.
But. Again, this is an idea that you did. This wasn't a one-off idea because it was a series, but it's such a... It's an idea that I think I've seen, it comes up every now and again where people, what if all celebrities live together? I think there was an AI version of it quite recently, wasn't there? But it's such a good idea, and I think you were the first people to do it as a show. Anyway, something.
Well, John and Phil were so clever. I mean, they could do anything. Both of them, they could play a whole city of people. And we started out with the shop, Mick and Keith running the shop, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards running the shop, which is it was very funny.
Yeah,
and they had store coats on as well. So Phil did Mick Jagger very well, and Keith actually did. John did Keith and. I think it was someone, a friend of ours, Jeff Beck, met Keith, and he said, do you watch? He said, I watched that thing. I'm going to buy that fucking shop. So it was appreciated by Keith. But then we started having people coming into the shop, and we thought, well, maybe they should be in the street, and so the street took over, and we had all kinds of people living there.
Yeah, it was everything. You did do the Glam Metal Detectives. Not sure that one has...
No, a lot of work.
Take the term. That was Glam Metal Detectives came out, I think,
have
just...
Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, because we, our show, Fist of Fun, that I did with Stuart Lee, basically took your slot, I think. So we had a couple of digs at you as well. That was our first TV show.
Oh, right.
And so we had a couple of jokes about Glam Metal Detectives, right. But only because you were the previous show to ours. Yeah, so I did watch it. And it was, again, I think it's probably ahead of its time. It was sort of a bit like...
It's our comic. We did a TV comic with serials, lots of serials in it.
Yeah, so it's a bit like The Fast Show, which was sort of about the same time.
Yes, it was. But ours was kind of much more of a comic kind of thing.
I think Paul Putner was in Glam Metal Detectives.
He was also in our show as well.
Yeah. So yeah,
we did Colin Corleone, which was, I suppose, a Viz idea, really.
Yes,
guy lives in Peckham, thinks he's the Godfather.
Yes, yeah,
that was funny.
It's good. It's interesting how much Viz has, how much influence. I don't think Viz gets the credit for the amount of influence it's had on comedy. Probably not your generation as much, but our generation.
Yeah.
And Vic and Bob and all of us used to love Viz. So
they
Viz,
were great,
Viz
they?
And, yes. you know, yes. The stuff you guys were doing had so much influence on what was to come. The Pope Must Die, you directed The Pope Must Die. Did you write The Pope Must Die as well?
Yeah.
So that's Robbie Coltrane.
That was going to be Steve Martin, actually. I wrote with him in New York
Right.
So he was going to play the Pope. And then our producers here didn't want to pay the money that his agent said he needed for it.
Right.
Of course, he would have sold it worldwide anyway. You know,
of course, yeah.
Pre-sales. It was a shame, really. But Robbie did a great job.
Yeah.
We had some great American casting in it, like Paul Bartel, who did a film called Eating Raoul. Did you ever watch that?
No.
Very funny film.
Right.
Alex Rocco was in The Godfather, played... The corrupt cardinal.
Right.
He was fantastic.
Yeah.
So it was Harvey Weinstein we worked with on that.
Right, that's good. Did he try anything
on
with
horrible,
you?
Horrible.
How did you get the funding, Peter? That's what I want to know.
No, he pulled the funding out a week before we about to shoot and then renegotiated on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was his little trick, I think.
So he wasn't a very nice guy, Harvey Weinstein.
I think he wouldn't have gone to jail for as long as he did if he hadn't done things like that.
Yeah.
I think people would have spoken up for him, but I think he did that quite a lot, you know.
Right. Oh, you see, so you kind of pissed enough people off that they weren't...
The moment I really got on with him was when we were actually releasing the film, because the rows I've had with producers about cutting it shorter,
yeah,
believe it or not, I'm always trying to cut the film shorter, and they're going, no, you've got to keep that scene in or it doesn't make sense. And I go, no, it's boring. They'll find out what's going on. It's fine, we can put a caption up or something. And Harvey was like, we were on a conference call with Harvey and Steve Woolley. I said to Harvey, Pete, what do you want to cut? Steve was going, no, we don't want to cut anything. I said, yes, see the scene here, blah, blah, blah. He said, it's cut. It's cut.
Because that's a hard thing. I've heard you talking about you've re-edited some of the comic strips for showing at BFI and things like that, haven't you, at festivals and things?
Yeah.
And is that, it's interesting, I guess, to go back to things and have another look at them and work out what you need and what you don't need.
There's such some good, great stuff in that film.
Yeah.
I mean, Harry was great, Harry Enfield.
Yeah.
And Anthony Sher and all those guys were really good. And I just thought there's a lot of slack scenes in there that need not be there and we could make a better film. So I put it down to 60 minutes from about 90. I chopped out 30 minutes, showed it was much better.
Right.
It's a sort of film that didn't need to be that long, actually. It was just better being like an hour long, but very expensive hour.
Yes, once you've done that, overshot by 50%.
It cost about $6 million. So I'm not very popular with Cathy about it.
No. And so I heard you're writing a book. Is that?
Yeah, writing a book. Everyone is writing a book, aren't they?
They are. Yeah. And I've got some that have been made.
You've done one, have you?
Yeah.
I've got this one.
About my. I lost a testicle, Peter. Clumsy.
Is that what the book's about?
Yeah. It is. So, but it's quite funny. It's quite a funny story. It does involve cancer, but So other people might be thinking. I'll wind down a little bit, you know. I'll enjoy my time in the West Country.
Yeah,
but you don't see you're staying.
I like keeping busy. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm not a sit around person. Really.
No,
too restless.
Do you think do you think you're underrated, Peter? I think you are. I don't think people. I don't think you get the credit you deserve for everything you've done. When you look at everything,
I think I've got to die first, haven't I?
I don't know. Maybe you just die and no one will still...
Then I'll get forgotten.
Yeah, maybe you die and there's still no credit. Imagine how embarrassing that'll be. At least you won't be around to... I think you get credit, but when you look at it... I mean, I think this happens a lot when I do these interviews, and especially with people who've, you know, got a proper body of work. You sort of see it and think, God, you know, that actually... I don't know if people really... And people will... have tuned into your 80s work or your 90s work or the stuff you've done recently. They won't necessarily have followed the whole career. And, you know, to think there's that many comic strips and they're nearly all completely different characters.
Well, it goes from 1982 to 2016 is the last one.
Yeah.
We've been trying to make... Well, we would have done that one last year.
Would have been another one?
Yeah, it would be nice, wouldn't it?
I mean, I think it's still... I mean,
Jennifer was up for it and so was Nigel and they're all up for it, you know.
I mean, they're dropping off a little bit like flies.
Well, I know. Ones are still alive.
Yeah. But there's still enough of them still going to... What I like about you as well is you're obviously aware of... Not of me... But of other people working, you're bringing in new people all the time. You know,
yes,
you're working with Stephen, for example, and talking about working with Matt. Not that he's particularly new, but you know, is there a different generation
between us? And
yes.
Yes, that was good. I mean, that was good working with Shane Allen actually. I was working with him online the other day, but it didn't. We got on great. But it didn't come off. Sadly, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's most writers would have probably more... Well, I certainly have more stories of failed TV shows than I think you will have.
I've got so many scripts that haven't been made.
Yeah, of course. But, it's weird how much that's a part of the job, right? Even someone who's successful, even someone with a track record, it's not guaranteed that, you know, someone at the wrong production company will come in or the wrong person will buy it or just the wrong...
Or
the commissioner won't get what's... But you would think it was... I mean, I know you've moved it around, haven't you? It went from Channel 4 to the BBC and then went to Gold. And then back to Channel 4.
I've been around the houses.
Yeah.
And now we're on ITV, BritBox.
Right, OK.
So we've done the lot.
Yeah, they're not making any more. They're just putting out the...
But
that's still pretty good. And, you know, so it does... Yeah, I mean, it's that's just so incredible that... I mean, it's not because they're good, but it's incredible that idea is permeated when you think of all the things that come and go. And I guess that the fact that if it had just been four people doing it, I suppose, you know, if it had been a team every single week. But I think it was established very quickly, hey, look, we can have someone completely different. This, you know, we can have...
Well, I think as people got older, we sort of brought people into the younger parts. So we just adapted to time, really, and met people on the way. And you know,
in a way, is it the carry-on of the new millennium?
I would rather call it the eating films of the...
Okay.
we didn't do one thing like that. I mean,
no,
the eating
true.
Films were all... Those were all films, weren't they?
And yeah.
Like Lady Kills. And some of them were great.
Yeah.
And I think some of them they could probably just throw away, but I'm sure we could do the same. You know,
it's just so interesting to see. Oh, it's very interesting to hear these stories about the creation of these different scenes and these iconic things. But I think that idea of the Hollywood takes on.
We did a couple of those.
I mean, it's never going to
be three of those. Yeah.
But that could go on and on because it's such a strong idea. It works on it's so many levels because you're parodying the actual events. You're parodying Hollywood. You're parodying.
You're using that macho kind of American style.
Yeah, it's so
fun,
nice.
You know, but I think we've done it to death, really, to be honest.
I know. Other people would have done something to death, but there's been even that one, which is the one you've done most as an idea. Yes. They're all still different, and they all, you know,
well,
you
John
you
Major
get different.
Was a kind of another political one we did. That was him running away from a circus.
Yes,
to become an MP. I know you saw that. It was great. Alexei was great. In that.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose Inside Number 9 might be the closest thing to now to that, but only in that it's. It's the different idea every week, but that again, I mean, I suppose with the very different characters, there's the core two of them doing them all. But
had a very good lineup. I mean, Jim Broadbent was great in one of our films.
Yes,
you know, to get to work people like that was wonderful.
Yeah, I hope that you know how important these things are and how much they mean to. Comedy fans, and certainly to me. So I'm really chuffed that you've come on, and I'm very excited to see what you come up with next. What is the book going to? What's the book about?
I'm going to call it Hotel Bastardos. tales from the comic strip and other stories sort of thing. So it's stories from the comic strip,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Some of which, a couple of which I spoke of tonight.
Of course, yeah. But that's, yeah, I mean, there must be so much. We've literally just touched the surface, I have to say, tonight. It's interesting to see all the progression of all the different people from that gang, you know, and sadly we have lost some of them, and, you know,
but
you know, I think Aid Edmondson, I think, is such an interesting character, and that the journey you've got, you're saying he was Rick's friend from school and from college, and he's ended up in Star Wars, and such
talent.
A fantastic actor.
He's a great actor, yeah. I mean, he's great as John Major in that.
Yeah.
In that one where we played the Rick Mears. One of my favourites, that one.
Yeah.
The Adrian's star in it. Fantastic.
He is, and I think when you look back at the young ones as well, as much as I was bedazzled by Rick Mail as a teenager, Aid Edmondson's work in the young ones is absolutely phenomenal, especially given how different he is in everything else.
Exactly.
It's almost a bit too much of a thing to bear, isn't it?
Sure.
But he seems to have shaken it off, which is great.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, look, Peter, I'd like to thank you very much for coming, and I wish you many more years of success. Ladies and gentlemen, the incredible Peter Richardson. Thank you very much. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Peter Richardson. Thank you to Scant Regard for this beautiful tunage. I'm indebted to my producer and director, friend, enemy, Chris Evans, not that one. Thank you to Ben Evans, Beck Cliff, George Lingford, everybody at the Northcott Theatre in Exeter, and everyone at Avalon who's facilitated this wonderful tour that we are on right now. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Come and see us on tour, richardherring.com/Rahulastapa.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.